Canada Vlantis joins us for This Week in Chicago History. And we start this morning with Ferris Bueller Day. That's tomorrow, isn't it, Anna?
Tomorrow, Bob. Get out and celebrate Ferris Bueller Day in Chicago. You know, it's so funny to think about this because astute viewers and journalists, actually, over the years have carefully examined the film Ferris Bueller's Day Off frame by frame, every event in it, searching for time-sensitive clues in the movie, and they have determined that the movie takes place on June 5th, 1985. So tomorrow, that's Ferris Bueller Day, the day Ferris ditched school and ran around Chicago and just had the time of his life. So it's interesting because there is a little bit of controversy over, Bob, I should mention, because the date that they've determined that most people favor is the day Ferris, Cameron, and Sloan, the main characters, attend a Cubs game, Cubs versus Braves. The real game was played on that day, June 5th, 1985, and it occurred on a Wednesday, and the movie is said to occur on a Wednesday, so it all seems to sync up. The only problem is the Von Steuben Day Parade, where, you know, he famously commandeers the float and starts singing Dankeschön and, you know, just takes over the whole parade. That was September 21st. It was an actual German Fest parade in Chicago that year, 1985. So some say, well, I'm not so sure which one it is. Doesn't matter. John Hughes made a heck of a film. It still stands up today. My daughter and I were just watching it. We love it. It's so good, even if you've seen it a million times. We pulled one of the most memorable scenes, Bob, for you here. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. See, you will recall this one.
Adams.
Here.
Adam Lee.
Here.
Adamson.
Here.
Adler.
Here.
Anderson. Anderson.
Here.
Bueller. 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 Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
Thank you, Simone.
No problem whatsoever.
It's fun to hear that again. I didn't realize people were studying this movie like the Zapruder film.
Oh, It, and then there's controversy because of the whole, there's actually another date I won't even go into that some people claim might be actual date, but doesn't matter, Bob. Get out and do something, you know, break a few rules tomorrow, right? Just celebrate, do something a little nuts, you know, just don't harm any Ferraris or do anything, you know,
exactly.
Get you injured in the process.
Now we have a little indoor amusement park history to talk about.
Yeah, Old Chicago Amusement Park opened its doors this week, 1975, to start the season. Thousands of people, literally thousands of people, showed up that very first day. It was a highly anticipated opening. Old Chicago, as you recall, probably was located in Bolingbrook, right off Route 53. It was the first of its kind in the world, Bob, fully enclosed indoor theme park and shopping mall, all housed under a big dome, a massive dome. And it was promising roller coasters, water rides, and thrills without worrying about the weather. For Chicago, that's a huge deal, right? It cost $40 million to build it. They had this, like, old Main Street inside, for those that recall. It was, like, vintage-themed and very patriotic displays everywhere. We check out this audio, though, because this is precious. We pulled an old TV ad from 1978 promoting Old Chicago when it opened, not long after it opened. It features the late, great George Wendt, and he was playing the role of a dad taking his family to the park.
Old Chicago's great, it's all brand new, there's lots of fun for you and you.
You make your own fun at the Fun Factory.
There's family fun in every way.
Chicago, a family can still afford to be a family.
So have an old Chicago day.
And this weekend, don't miss Old Chicago's Carnival Party.
Yeah, it didn't last long, though, did it, Anna?
No. You know, it was only a few years, less than five, that just, even though they had all the buzz in the world, it just had a lot of high operational costs, maintenance costs, and just other parks opening, too. You know, when the nicer weather, they didn't want to be in the indoor park, too. So it just kind of collapsed, unfortunately, because it was known to be a ton of fun. But
yeah.
Very cool.
Billy Corgan, Forever Young. And I guess you could say he's the number one Bozo fan. Anna, fill us in on a little Bozo history here.
Yeah, it somehow works together, Bob, and it's seems strange, but the Bob Dylan original classic song remade by Billy Corgan was first performed this week, 2001, on the final episode of The Bozo Show. Not your typical rock star song debut route, but Billy Corgan, as you know, Bob, was a huge Bozo super fan. He went to the show as a kid, growing up here in the Chicago area. In 1978, he said, was the first time he got to see Bozo in person, and then was invited back to perform on the final show years later, which he said was a huge honor. It was called 40 Years of Fun, a 90-minute tribute to Bozo. And Billy Corgan just said it was a proud moment. He decided to debut that new song of his. It was a remake, of course, but a new song, and performed it on the Bozo Show. 20 years later, Bob, I pulled this clip, you'll recall. He came on your show to talk about how he was holding a three-day Bozo Fest at Madame Zuzu's restaurant, his place in Highland Park, and he discussed that with you last year, I believe.
I went once when I was a kid, 1978, and then I was on the last show that WGN ever had.
Did you get to play the grand prize game?
No, I did not. Somewhere in my house, I have the last ball from the last grand prize game ever played officially, and then I got to sing Forever Young by Bob Dylan to Bozo.
Do you worry about how doing this Bozo stuff could hurt your image as a hip alt-rock icon? I remember interviewing Alice Cooper back in the 70s, and he didn't even want anyone to know he was a golfer.
Yeah, I don't know. I think times have changed. Maybe it's social media. I remember for a while I was a special Cubs correspondent commenting on the Cubs mm-hmm. on radio, mm-hmm. and people would give me guff about it, saying, you know, you're supposed to be a rock star. What do you care about baseball? I think this is the silliest thing in the world. If you're lucky to be successful at anything and you don't use that time and that money and that access to live out your other dreams that you have in life, I mean, look, I don't begrudge anybody for chasing down their dreams. I think that's what life is about, just being happy and living your life to its fullest.
Love Billy. He never really cares too much about what other people think, does he?
No, not really his thing, but good for him. That's super fun how he celebrates Bozo. Love it.
We have a little grocery store history now, and this is interesting. I never thought about how these private labels were created.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Bob, because you go back to 1977, and Juul, the Juuls, often known as that in certain circles, launched its line of generic grocery store items. And do you remember, think back, it was like very no-nonsense, black-and-white packaging. Just said the name, like dish soap, cornflakes.
Uh-huh.
My favorite was catsup. It was like so cheap you couldn't even call it ketchup. It was catsup.
Uh-huh.
And it was in this bold type and no branding, no marketing, no fancy promises, just generic. And it was offered at a seriously lower cost. I remember times being in the grocery store trying to convince my mom to buy the real stuff. Like, can't we get the ketchup? Do we have to get the generic? You know, like, but no, but it was way cheaper. And sometimes it tasted just as good. So people loved it. It became a highly profitable segment of Juul, and it set a trend in the grocery store business. So lots of stores started their own private label brands. Store-owned brands just started to compete, actually, with some of the name brands. And we pulled a clip here, Bob, when Juul went from was expanding because it was so successful in the 70s, moving from dry goods into generic branded dairy foods.
You know Juul's generics save you money, and the more you buy, the more you save. So now Juul is offering you another choice, generics in the dairy case. They're a lower cost alternative to some of the dairy products you're already buying. They're as wholesome as the name brands, and they taste good too. Best of all, they cost less. The next time you're shopping the dairy case, consider generics. Now you have a choice of savings at Juul.
I can still see that black and white mm-hmm. label, can't you?
Me too.
Yeah. We have a lot of so candy funny. History in this city. Let's talk about the Butterfinger bar.
Yeah, so much so. Really, so many iconic brands born right here in Chicago, been acquired by others. But back in the day, 1923, the Butterfinger was born, created by the Curtis Candy Company of Chicago. Otto Schneering was the company's founder. He had created the Baby Ruth, and it was a huge hit, and he wanted another one. So Otto was as great of a marketer as he was a candy maker, and he did these big spectacle events to promote his candy bars, like dropping candy bars literally from the sky from airplanes onto Chicago with coupons attached to them for free candy bars. Like, he'd do this kind of crazy stuff. And he got his candy bars into the hands of all the top radio stars so they talk about it on air. I mean, that was way before his time. And he held this public contest in 1923 to name his new candy bar so that everybody was engaged in this. And the name chosen was Butterfinger, which was kind of a slang term at the time for clumsy. That's what it meant. And it was very catchy, and it was really fun to say. And no one had more fun saying it than the eventual spokesman, Bart Simpson. Here he is with his famous commercials, one of them, one of the many.
Behold, the last Butterfinger in the whole house, and I have it.
Dad says no teasing.
Na 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 na.
Whoa!
Check out the smooth, chocolatey outside, the crispity, crunchity, peanut buttery inside.
Dad says if you make a scream, you're dead meat.
You wouldn't scream.
Dad! Now what?
Never mind.
Nobody better lay a finger on my Butterfinger.
I have to say, I was never a fan of that candy bar.
Okay, so this is so controversial because I love the candy bar. I only eat it at Halloween. I allow myself to eat, like, tons of Butterfingers. But you're right, I never really go to the, you know, the convenience store and you crave the Butterfinger. It's just kind of funny. It's one of those weird ones that shows up at holidays a lot more than other times.
No, get me a Goo Goo Cluster any day of the week. Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. Thank you, Anna. Have a good one.
You too, Bob.
9 o'clock news on the way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Home practice is about to begin. Your daughter's new tap shoes? Loud. Your son's new tuba? Louder. But you got this. Just like Associated Bank's got you with $50 overdraft grace zone. So if you lose track of expenses buying some noise-canceling and sanity-saving headphones, we've got your back. You got this with $50 overdraft grace zone from Associated Bank. See associatedbank.com/checking or ask a banker for details. Member FDIC.
Okay, the rains are here and PermaSeal is here to help. If you're getting seepage or are concerned about that possibility, give us a call at 800-421-SEAL. Our experienced staff is standing by, either to set up a free inspection, replace a failed sump pump, or just answer a question you may have. PermaSeal is a family-owned business that you can trust. We've got an A-plus rating with the BBB and over 14,000 five-star reviews. We are ready to help. Call now, 800-421-7325, or visit permaseal.net.
Thinking about selling your home but dreading what hidden fees and repairs might cost you? I'm Tom Detlich with Grandview Homes. Our home buying process is simple. You'll get our honest offer in hours, and the amount we offer is the amount you get, period. Get your no-obligation offer at GrandviewHomes.com today.
Meet Alan, who was diagnosed with sleep apnea.
I was what they call a mouth breather, and I would breathe at night with my mouth open.
And for about 8 years, Alan struggled with a CPAP machine. And then?
And then I saw the Advent commercial. And I thought, well, what do you got to lose? This machine is miserable.
For most people, CPAP machines are miserable. But a simple in-office solution from Advent can be life-changing.
It really was, to me, it was amazing because I...